My, my, my. I didn't expect that. This sermon was supposed to be for 10 people. And I came looking for a classroom. I didn't expect this. Once again, this is not my doing. You have those who are sat either side of you to thank for being here today. So look at them and say thank you. Honestly, this is not my doing. How are you all doing today? Good? Some saying great. Then I do wonder what my task is here. It's not too bad actually. It's fine. Not sure it's. So someone's put forward a question, and there's also a silly idea. That's not my words, that's their words. They say there's a silly idea. Have a think about what this means to you. It says, don't you agree, Swami Nuhansa, that if we all had the ability to recall our past lives, we would always try to be better and we'll always avoid sinful deeds? Once again, don't you agree that if we all had the ability to recall our past lives, we would all be better and avoid doing sinful deeds? What do you think? Some saying yes, some saying no, some looking confused. The answer is yes and no. Yes, because if you had the ability to recall your past lives and your past actions, then when you go through the consequences of your actions or the rewards of your good deeds, you'd be able to make sense of why good things happen to you and why bad things happen to you. You'd be able to make sense of that. And so therefore, you would be able to strive to be better, avoid sinful deeds, and thereby it might actually lead one to consider living a better life, a more wholesome life. Yes, that is true. Having said that, the answer is also no, because it is not your inability to recall your past lives that cause you to vex. Your mental vexation is not due to your inability to recall your past lives. It's because of ignorance and attachment, avidya and tanha. Just because you are able to recall your past lives does not make you vex less, does not make you suffer less, to put it in very simple terms, because suffering is the cause of, or suffering is the product of attachment, not the ability or the inability to recall your past lives. If that were true, what would the Buddha have said or proclaimed the second noble truth of suffering to be? The cause of suffering, he would have said, is the inability to recall past lives. That's what the Buddha would have said. The first noble truth of suffering, and the second noble truth of suffering, or the cause of suffering, is the inability to recall past lives, he would have said. And then what he would have asked you, or advised all of us to do, was to practice samadhi. Or maybe to practice jhanas. To be able to recall our past lives. Because that's possible. If you cultivate your mind and practice enough, you can achieve the ability to recall past lives. But here's the thing. You are no better than what you are today. Because it's not that causes suffering. Attachment is what causes suffering. And attachment will prevail for as long as ignorance prevails. Ignorance is not knowing what you did in your past lives. That is not what ignorance is. Ignorance is the stuff that we talk about. your expectations. Your expectations that worldly things can please you, can give you happiness. Seeking happiness from outside. There are many yogis who can recall past lives. In fact, there are some humans who can recall past lives. So that one of the questions was, well, how come some can and some can't? I'll give it to you in very simple terms, because that's a topic for another day. Some can, because although we talk about life as a series of, or rather, we talk about this, our journey in samsara as a series of lives and death and so on, birth and death and so on, there's something special that happens between some of these lives, and that is called the end of a bhava. A bhava is your human being. Now you'll think, we understand what human being is. Now I mean human being in another sense. When we do karma, we acquire enough merit to be born several times as humans. Typically. So, because your lifetime is determined not by how much merits you've done, not just by that, but also for how long your bodies can sustain itself. So there are some who die young. There are some who have accidents. Right, so there are various causes of death. Some people live their lifespan. Others die while they are still infants. So all that happens there, ladies and gentlemen, is the body breaks. And when the body breaks, there's still merit power or karmic energy for a human life to continue, because what came first was not your human body, but your humanness of mind. The mind creates this body, just like you build a house for yourselves to live in. What comes first, the house or you? You come first, then you build a house. Your humanness comes first, and then you build a human house to live in. What if devaness comes first? Deva or godliness. If that came first, then you would build a deva house or a god house. In other words, you'd be born gods. What if a preta house comes first, or pretaness comes first? Then you build a preta house. So depending on what karmas you've done, this is why it is so crucial that we prepare ourselves for that final moment, because in the last chitta that arises in these bodies, you will all be committing a crime. No, that's not true. You'll all be committing a karma. That's what I meant to say, but I said a crime. I don't know why that slipped out. You'll all be committing a karma unless by that point you'll have become karmakshaya. In other words, arahatanvanse. At which point your last chitta will not commit a karma. Because the karma is not committed, no more karmic energy is there to create another body. And therefore, you're not born again. That is why it's so crucial to become a sotapanna, a stream enterer. Because once you become a stream enterer, when that last chitta arises in these bodies, whenever that might be, could be today, which I always keep reminding you, the inevitable, could be today. When that last chitta arises, you cannot help yourself from committing a karma. Let's discuss a little bit today about what that karma might be. You can't stop yourself from committing that karma. And if that karma is one to do, or if that karma is sinful, if that karma is an unmeritorious deed, then end of story. At that point, you create an abode for you, a body for you, in the four great hells. And then your chitta is born there. At that point, there's no rescue. I can preach to you and stop you from becoming an animal, but once you become one, I can't help you. I can give you the Dhamma and stop you from becoming a preta, but once you become one, there's no help. which explains my appeal to you last week, over the last few weeks, in fact. You need to work on your salvation. No one can help you after that. Not even the Buddha. Name one sermon the Buddha gave to the four great hells. Give me one. There are 84,000 discourses that he'd given. Right? 84,000 of them, at least by present count. We don't know how many we might have lost over time. Give me one that he'd given to an animal. Give me one sermon he'd preached to a monkey. He visited the heavens to see his mother and he preached the Abhidhamma. What sermon did he give to go to the Niraya and preach? Which sermon did he give preach to a stray dog? None, right? But this is the infinitely compassionate one. He's the infinitely compassionate one and he doesn't give a single thought. He doesn't bat an eyelid. He looks away when he sees a stray dog because he realizes, beyond my help. So if a Buddha can't help, then a Buddha Putra can't help anyway. This is why what I want is for all of you to free yourselves from the four great hells. Today, some of you may believe in it, others might not. There may still be skeptics around you. I mean, I was a skeptic for a long time. The most beautiful thing about the Dhamma is you don't necessarily have to believe in the four great hells to escape the four great hells. I was amazed by that when I learned that. You really don't need to believe in the four great hells to escape the four great hells. You just need to understand anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Oh, don't we just love the Buddha? He made it so simple for us. Just imagine if he had said, to escape the four great hells, you have to become a believer. You have to believe me. You have to believe what I say to escape the four great hells. Then for the non-believers, that's it. That's why I say, you can go to church, you can go to the mosque, you can go to the kovil, and you can still become a stream enterer. All you have to do is to understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, which is the characteristic of all existence. It is a science. Nothing to do with belief. I don't need your faith for that. I just need your merit power, a little bit of intelligence, and the sparkle of wisdom. Human beings are born in one of three ways. There are those who are called the ahetukas. Ahetukas are those who don't have the causes. That's why they're called ahetukas. They have no intelligence about them at all. They don't even have worldly intelligence. In fact, life is very difficult for them. They can't make sense of what's going on around them. Typically, when you see them, you can identify them. I can describe it further, but I know people will be offended, so therefore I'll stop. Because there are among you regulars and those who have just come here today for the first time as well. And sometimes people are pretty seriously offended when I say things like, unless you listen to the Dhamma, you can't understand the Dhamma. For people who are deaf, they can't understand the Dhamma, they can't become sotapannas. People get offended by that because they think I'm insulting the deaf people. I'm just stating facts. I don't invent the truth. I give you the truth. Because a sotapanna can only become a sotapanna by listening to the Dhamma. You can't read the Dhamma and become a sotapanna. Sota is the ear. You can't contemplate by yourself and become a sotapanna. You can't meditate and become a sotapanna. You can meditate and become a sakrudagami, an anagami, and even a rahatan vahansi. But you can't meditate yourself out of prutakjana state into a sotapanna. It doesn't work like that. Keep trying. I did. Didn't work. To enter the stream, you need what is called the Parato Goshak Pratya. It has to come from someone else. It has to come from an Aryan. It has to come from someone who is at least a Sotapanna. You have to be in their vicinity listening to a talk. It doesn't have to be a Dhamma talk like this. You're just having a chat over a cup of tea. That's okay. As long as they're preaching the Dhamma to you, something to do with the reality of nature. They might simply be explaining to you what the word Buddha is. Maybe they're just precepting you. But it has to come from them because it comes with a bout of compassion. That is the catalyst. You know how a catalyst works? It doesn't take part in the reaction, but its presence is required for the reaction to happen. Just like that. The ahetukas are those who just don't have their wits about them. They don't have intelligence. In society, there are people who have medical conditions. And typically, you can spot them and say, they just don't have the intelligence to just get on and do day-to-day stuff. I'm not going to name them because people will be offended by that. But you're intelligent enough, you can have a think. Secondly, you have those who are called the duhetukas. These people, they have the intelligence to go about and do worldly things. They can learn, they can study, they can do jobs, they can work, they can earn money. They can become successful in their careers. They might even have good family lives and so on. But what they don't have is the faculty of wisdom. Intelligence is one, wisdom is another. And I don't mean wisdom in a worldly sense. I mean wisdom in the sense that allows you to understand the truth that the Buddha taught, the Four Noble Truths. That's a very peculiar type of wisdom. It's like wisdom on steroids, if you like. There's a spark of wisdom. Trihetukas are those who are born with the right conditions in their minds so that in the presence of a noble one, as they're listening to the Dhamma and they do the Yonasa Manasikara, wisdom arises within them. But for that, you have to be equipped with the ability for that to happen within you. These are called the Trihetuka Pratisandhilabhi. They have what is called the Aloba, Adosa and Amoha. Therefore, the Trihetu. Why am I talking about this? I don't know. So there may be among you those who have a Trihetuka Pratisandhi. A Pratisandhi is your rebirth. I was talking about recalling past lives. That's the connection. So as you do karmas, at the point of your death, this last chitta called the Chuti Chitta, Chuti because that is to exit. That is what chuti means, to exit. That chitta which arises in your mind, and in that moment you perform a karma. And once that karma is done, that determines where you are born. This is why becoming a stream mentor is so important, because once you become a stream mentor, you begin to realize the nature of the world, and then no chittas arise within you which are called the apayagami chittas. In other words, chittas that take you into the four great hells, these chittas do not arise in your mind from there on. That is what happens for a stream enterer. And that is all down to their understanding of the Dhamma. No magic, it's just logic. See, there are two kinds of people who steal. There are those who steal because they enjoy doing it. There are those who steal because they have no other choice. They're very different. Two classes of theft. In the same manner, a stream mentor is someone who, even if they're inclined to conduct a demeritorious deed, Because it is not said anywhere in the Tripitaka that a Sotapanna does not commit unmeritorious deeds. So therefore I can't utter that. But here's what the Tripitaka does confirm, and we can know for certain. Even if an unmeritorious deed happens in the mind, because unmeritorious deeds don't happen through the arms and legs, they always happen in the mind. Chetanaham bhikkave kammang vadami. Karma is something that happens in the volition, and volition is always in the mind. Even if a Sotapanna person or a stream enterer commits an unmeritorious deed, they don't do it happily. They don't do it willingly. They don't do it because they enjoy doing it. They only do it because they have no other choice. Perhaps you might have a mother who, because she has to feed her family, might pluck a papaya from the next door neighbor. But it is theft. She might do it without their permission, but she will do it because she has to feed her children. And even while she does it, she knows what I'm doing is wrong. Therefore, she doesn't enjoy it. It is possible, let's say 1%, there's a possibility that a stream enterer might do something like that. Because in the Tripitaka, the only people who the Buddha claims are completely and entirely free of sin are the Rahatanvanses. They are what they call the Punya Papa Pahinasa. They don't commit any unmeritorious deeds, just as much as they don't commit any meritorious deeds. Because all karmas are either meritorious deeds or unmeritorious deeds. Once you are free of karma, there is no need for a meritorious deed or an unmeritorious deed. But they still commit actions. Actions that do good to others. Remember, action is not the same as karma. Action is what you do. Karma is what you think. So if people had the ability to recall past lives, they may be able to piece their actions today, their karmas today, with the consequences. That they may be able to do. But yet again, it's like asking this, you know, I'll give you an equivalent question. People who've been to prison, and they get out of prison after serving their sentence, don't they reoffend? Not all of them. So it's not a general statement. Don't some people who come out of prison reoffend? Right? Does that not answer your question? Does that not answer your question? Do they not know that such offenses can get them incriminated and incarcerated? But they still offend, right? Not because they don't know the consequences of their actions. They still offend because they can't help it. Because once vexation arises in the mind, it's like a pressure in the pressure cooker. You have to let it out. That's why the only refuge that we all have, ladies and gentlemen, the only refuge that we have is to free our minds from attachment once and for all. Don't look for any other answers. Mark my words. Don't look for any other solutions. There are no shortcuts. There are no shortcuts for happiness. There are no shortcuts to free yourself from suffering. There are no shortcuts to getting out of hell. There aren't. There's only one thing you can do for that, and that is to free your mind of attachment. Every week I'll come here and I'll convince you of that there are no other shortcuts. There are no alternatives. I didn't become a monk because there was something else that I could also have done. I tried it all. This side of having children for myself, I tried it all. I wanted to have children. It didn't work out for some reason. Now I know why. Is the display off? Not working? Huh. Is the camera recording still? It is? Thank you. Thank you, sir. Do you know why the gentleman did that? How dare you interrupt the sermon? Do you know why he did that? He's here, so why does he care about whether the camera is recording or not? For others. Because those online would not be able to listen to this if the camera didn't record this. You know this. The gentleman knows this. So he puts his hand up and says, Swaminathan, sir, we had better stop. We'd better pause because the sermon's not recording. See? Isn't there such goodness in this world? Look at people who think about others so selflessly. You're all like that. That's why I said, thank the people on either side for being here today. So someone who's listening to this online will come here tomorrow. They'll be in the audience, they'll be among you, but to be here, they have to have listened to this online. So whoever offered that camera has taken part in this tremendously meritorious deed. Whoever set up the microphone here, whoever's offered this, maybe this belongs to the school. But whoever brought this here, they might not have even known all the goodness that was going to happen because of this piece of equipment. Sometimes you don't need to know all the goodness that will come out of making an offering. You just make the offering. You just make an offering. When you offer a meal, you need not know all the good that people are going to do after having that meal. You offer it out of the goodness of your own heart. And then the merits that you earn as a result of that is determined by two factors. One, your intention, and two, what it is used for. You can't decide what it's used for. That is determined by the other party. So when you offer something to the sasana is the only place where true freedom can be achieved. I want to talk to you about that today. There are a lot of things I want to talk to you about. Can you come home with me? There are a lot of things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you about yourself. So, the short answer, why can't we recall our past lives? It's because although this body breaks and you are reborn a human being, all that has happened is the body is broken and you now have another body, but it's the same karmic energy that made you a human that still continues. There comes a point where you have a chuti chitta. At that point, you exit your current bhava, which is the human beingness, and you then take on another bhava. Bhava is being. I'm still looking for the right terms to really get the picture across to you. I sometimes refer to the textbook, but sometimes those words just doesn't cut it for me. It doesn't have the same, I don't know, the same oomph. So sometimes I still look for the right words to get some of this across. Bhava is a bit like this. Now I'll forget to precept you in a moment. Do remind me. Each of these is an instance of rebirth. Human, born, died. Human, born, dead. Human, dead. Human. At this point, you have a chuti chitta. Here, you don't have chuti chittas. A chuti chitta happens at the point of your exiting the current bhava. This is human. This could be deva. It could be preta, it could be animal, it could be anything. What we know for certain right now is, if this is you, you are human. So when you are dead, you can be born again in another human form, for as long as you still have karmic energy that sustains your human bhava. So perhaps the last deed that you did to be born human had enough karmic energy to span, let's say, 1,000 years. But these bodies cannot sustain 1,000 years, can they? At most, maybe 100. So if you live the entirety of those 100 years, you could be born 10 times over, human. Of course, in the meantime, you keep on doing other karmas. But here's also something else that can happen. Although you might have 1,000 years of human karmic energy, so this is what is called a bhava. This is a shift of bhava. Okay? Although you might have 1,000 years of human karmic energy, if you commit quite a potent karma, a strong karma, that can make a change to this. And instead of exhausting all 1,000 years, along the way, if you do a strong karma, such as a jhana, such as killing a mother, your father, these are the panchanantriya papa karma, the five heinous sins. If you commit any one of those, then it matters not how much human karmic energy you have left. At that point, this pauses. This doesn't expire, it pauses. And then, in its stead, you get... So if you've done one of the five heinous sins, is it going up or down after that? Up or down? Down. And then what happens is, let's say at this point you've consumed now 200 of your years, of the 1,000, so you have 800 left. This pauses. And instead, that karma that you did creates new karmic energy in a new bhava. That could be nirya bhava. And that could be that many years. Oh. Usually life up there and life down below, lifespan is very, very, very long. These 100 years or these 1,000 years is the time in which you accrue all that karmic energy. Either to go up and spend a blissful life, or to go down and to spend a life of misery. Don't you, just look around and see. Human beings, they're either doing good things or they're doing bad things. The human realm is the perfect place to accrue merit or demerit. Because there's opportunities to do both. In the Deva world, there's little opportunity to do good. Little opportunity. I can't say none, but little opportunity to do good, because when you're in the Deva world, everyone has everything they want. You don't have beggars in the Deva world. You don't have the Mahasangha in the Deva world, so you can't make offerings to the Sangha. Everyone has whatever their karmic energy has earned them, that's what they have in the Deva world. So a deva has his own abode. You don't need to make a house for a deva. You can't do that. You can't build a divine palace for a deva. You can't do that. You just cannot do that. It's physically impossible. Because a deva, when they're born with their divine palace. The size of that, the grandeur of that, the luxury of that is all determined by the merits that they have done. And the same goes for when you go into the four great hells. With the exception of the animal realm, because the animals are also in this human world, so therefore you can feed a hungry dog. But once you become a Niryagami Preta, there are two types of Preta. There's Jnati Preta. Jnati Preta is where your folks might be once they're dead, if they still have energy left in their 1,000 years of human existence. It's not always 1,000. I'm just taking an example here. It's an arbitrary number. So say, for example, you die here after 200 years, right? But you have to come back to a mother's womb, right? So for that duration where you are a Gandharva looking for conception in a mother's womb, that is called a Jnati Preta. That's who you transfer merits to. When you say, Idam me Jnati nang hotu, Sukita hontu nyatayo. When you transfer merits to your past relations, those are relations who are still looking for a mother's womb to conceive in. They're called the Jnati Preta. They're not born in the hells. They're like spirits, if you like. They're born, they have humanness about them, but they just don't have a human body. So they have to conceive in a mother's womb to take human form, flesh. Then there's another type of preta called the Niregami Preta. So these pretas, this is one of the four great hells. And once you are there, you can't save them. Then they have to wait until they have expired their karmic energy. That's what's so bad about going to the four great hells. Because once you're there, ladies and gentlemen, you can't do meritorious deeds. You can't do them. You can't do meritorious deeds to escape this. Once you're in the Niraya, that's it. You can't listen to the Dhamma. You can't make offerings. You can't help another person. You can't do any such things. Because it's just constant suffering. There's not a moment of respite. And so you have to wait until you have expired all your karmic energy, until you get another chance for a chuti-chitta to arise. See, that's what I mean. As humans, you don't have to wait until you have expired all of your human karmic energy to take on another bhava. And devas and brahmas the same. But if you are an animal, for instance, you can't change this because you can't do meritorious deeds. You can do unmeritorious deeds. Like say, for example, if a dog attacks another dog, and that dog tends to be its mother. Now, what has the dog just done? A dog attacks another dog, and that dog is the dog's mother. Right? Or the dog's father. I mean, dogs still have mothers and fathers, right? So if that dog attacks another dog, if a dog attacks another dog, and that dog is the dog's father, and that dog dies as a result of that attack, what has the dog just done? Committed a heinous sin. Wherever you have this concept of mothers and fathers, the two anantariya karmas to do with killing mothers and fathers, they apply. It's not just to human beings. That's why the animal realm is such a terrible place to be in. Because when a pack of dogs get together and they have a fight, they don't think that this is my father, this is my mother. They don't consider any of those things. But as human beings, we take that into consideration. Right? You might raise your arm up, but if it's your mother, you might not. You might be angry, but you may never raise your arm to your father. Before you say something out, you consider the fact that this is my mother, so I should not speak up. But a dog, an animal, they have no understanding of such things. Therefore, unmeritorious deeds can happen a lot, but there's just no room for meritorious deeds. That's why we must strive to make use of this human life that we have, because this is where everything gets decided. This is the court. This is where everything gets decided. Your future is decided here. How long you're going to enjoy or how long you're going to suffer is all decided here. That's why a Buddha is born in the human world. Because it is here you have the power of wisdom to make sense of the world that you live in and to make the right choices about what you want to be in the future. Otherwise, you got to wonder why a Buddha wasn't born in the human, in the Deva worlds. Why is a Buddha not born in the Deva worlds? Because in the Deva worlds, one, there's not a lot of suffering going on because they have a lot of merits there and they just consume their merits. But in the human world, you see both sides of it. You see the good that comes out of doing good. You also see the bad that comes out of doing bad. Therefore, this is the prime opportunity This is the perfect place for one to attain, for one to understand the Dhamma. And this is the last opportunity that one has, this side of the four great hills, to understand the Dhamma. So therefore, out of compassion, Buddhas will always appear in the human worlds, wherever they do. Why can't you recall? Once you jump a bhava as humans, because here's what can also happen. This could also be human. So you have expired 1,000. This could be 1,000. And you do another karma, a strong karma, which gives you, let's say, another 500. That could be another human bhava, not the same one, another human bhava. Once you make that shift, that bhava shift, there is no hope of remembering anything that has been done from before that. You can't recall those memories. That is what we understand for now. Perhaps in a future sermon I might give you a better explanation, but that is what we understand for now. In between, it's possible that people recall from time to time their past lives. Now, many of the stories that you might have heard of people recalling their past lives are stories of people who've died in accidents or something like that. So it was not a karmaksha marana. It was not a death that was caused by the exhaustion of their karmic energy. That's why it's not a karmaksha marana. Sometimes it's an ayukshaya marana. End of the life energy that they have. Sometimes it's an ubhayakshaya marana, which is the two of them together. And then there's finally another one, which is by accident. No predetermined course. Just, you know, you walk down the street and a vehicle runs over you. You still have life within you. There's still karmic energy left, but it's just by accident. And that can happen. Typically, when you have stories of people who relate their past lives, you have similar stories. People who talk about how something happened, maybe in the war. I was killed in the war. People talk about such stories. So what you have is deaths like these. You tend to recall, not always, I mean very few and far between. I think a very small proportion of people can actually recall their past lives. But that's how it works, based on our current understanding of how things work in the world. So this may not be 100% accurate, but I think it's closer to the truth than it is further from the truth. But it matters not. This is not what we need to concern ourselves about. I'm only giving this to you because this is just additional information as you've asked a question. None of this is going to help you to free yourself from suffering. This is just a nice to know, that's all. So if that didn't make sense, it's okay. That's why I don't tend to spend a lot of time talking about these things, because this is not what's going to help you save yourself from the four great hells. Neither is any of this going to help you save yourself from suffering. Like I said, if the inability to recall your past lives was the cause of suffering, the Buddha would have given you a way to recall your past lives. Out of all his compassion, wouldn't he have done that? Yes, but that's not what he wasted his time with. He didn't waste his time. He didn't waste your time. The first sutta that he delivered, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, there is no reference to recalling past lives or what you need to do for that. He speaks of the Four Noble Truths. Because that is his gift to the world. So that is why we don't talk a lot about these things, because it's not really of any significance for your achievement of salvation. It's just a nice to know, that's all. So therefore, even if this is not precise, so okay, it's fine. But what's very important that we understand precisely is anicca, dukkha and anatta. Because that is your key to Nibbana. Or your gateway to Nibbana. So, that's what we need to talk about. I think I've answered the question. A couple of the other questions I will address as we go forward. Talks about how chittas... No. Do emotions change the strength of our chittas? So, answers to those questions will come as we go forward. Now, before I forget, let's take a moment to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and observe the precepts. Excuse me. Reminding ourselves that it is only thanks to the Buddha we have the path to our deliverance today and the path to freedom from suffering once and for all. Let us bring our palms together in veneration of his holy name, as well as to take an opportunity to renew our pledge of allegiance to the Noble Triple Gem. And may this be an oath that you take upon yourselves to practice the path diligently and fervently until the end of suffering. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Once again, if you're all still very skeptical about all of this, that's perfectly fine. It's like when people come and ask me, Swaminathan sir, I want to be a good Buddhist, but I can't give up drinking. I still love my alcohol. I still love the odd glass of wine from time to time. Can I still be a Buddhist and have my alcohol? My answer is, you just listen to the Dhamma sermons, right? Don't try and do what you cannot do. Focus on what you can do. And when the time is right, you will give up everything that is not going to be of essence to you. That's all. Today, if you drink, because you believe that drinking makes you happy, that's my fault. Isn't it? Because I haven't explained to you how to achieve your own happiness. Once you understand that, then you won't need the bottle. Remember when your kids were very young, to feed them, you couldn't just feed them like solid food, right? What do you had to do? You had to mash it. Right? You had to mash it. Sometimes if mashing was not enough, you put in a bottle. Right, you put in the blender and liquefy it and then put in the bottle and get them to drink it. How did you get them to stop the bottle? Did you pull the bottle away from the child? No, the child grew up. Right? So as the child grew up, then the teeth started appearing in their mouth, and then they slowly weaned off the bottle. That happens eventually. It happens gradually. It'll happen when it happens. So give me a virtual show of hands, a virtual one. Right? Give me a virtual show of hands, those Buddhists among you who still need their bottle to keep them happy. Just a virtual show of hands. Virtual. So I speak to all of you. I mean, not all of you. I mean, those among you who had those virtual hands up. Right? Let that be for a while. Let it be. If you understood the true meaning of Suramere Majvama Dattana Veramani Sikapadan Samadhyami, you wouldn't have a problem with drinking and that. It has a much more profound meaning than I refrain from taking intoxicants. The Buddha did not come into this world to stop people from drinking alcohol. He's the Buddha, for heaven's sake. I mean, the president of the Alcoholics Anonymous is enough to do that, right? You don't need the Buddha to come and tell you to stop drinking. So why didn't the Buddha have I stop smoking? Why is that not one of the precepts? The Buddha said stop intoxicating yourself. Not from alcohol. Sights, sounds, smell. Taste, touch. Now what do you have to say? Does stop drinking make you a good Buddhist? A good Buddhist is someone who stops intoxicating themselves from sight. You can see, but you don't need to. That's a good Buddhist. You can see, but you don't want to. You don't have a desire to see. Now there's a good Buddhist. You can hear, but you have no desire to hear. You're free from hearing. You're free from the urge to hear. You're free from the longing to hear. You're free from the longing to see. Isn't that what causes you suffering? Is it not your desire to see that causes you suffering? Is that not why, you know, when you have the cataract and all that, right? As you start to age and you start, you know, you have these visual impairments and so on, or if something gets in your eye, why do you start to why does it hurt you inside? It's because at that moment your faculty of sight, which is one of your five refuges to free yourself from vexation, is gone. People need sight simply to be happy. If you went blind, you know, just the thought of it, of going blind. Let's just say a poor man, a beggar, we go and talk to the man and say, I'm going to give you a grand house, right? Free, a big grand house, it has its own swimming pool, three stories, right? Fully furnished. But you have to give up your faculty of sight. So I'll take away your ability to see, and instead I give you a house. What do you think they'll say? What do you think they'll say? But they're a beggar on the street. Every day they go looking for shelter. They're sitting in the bus stops, under the bridges, right? Okay, then we say, okay, we'll give you the house, we'll also give you food. For the rest of your life. So you don't have to go begging, but in exchange, you have to give up your sense of sight. What do you think they'll say? No, no. That's not a deal that they would be happy to strike. Because the mind wants the eyes. It wants to be able to see. If you can truly observe the fifth precept, ladies and gentlemen, in its entirety, in its total and complete and comprehensive, profound meaning, then you are someone who is an Arhatan Nuhansi. The five precepts are enough to take you from a Sotapanna to Arhatan Nuhansi. Because your entire set of virtues and practice is contained within the five precepts. It's the Buddha who gave it. It has to be comprehensive. So Surame Re Majjhama is nothing to do with your bottle. Although most people think that not drinking makes me a good Buddhist. I've heard people say that. I don't drink also, no Swami Nuhansa. I'm a good Buddhist. Oh, there's another one. I'm vegetarian also, no Swami Nuhansa. I'm a good Buddhist. I'm a vegetarian and I don't drink, so I'm a good Buddhist. That doesn't qualify. Monkeys don't drink. And they are vegetarian. Does that make them good Buddhists? It's not what you refrain from physically that makes you a good or a bad Buddhist. Buddhism, your Buddhistness, is that even a word? Buddhistness? We just invent stuff, right? I mean, this is free reign, right? We are in a safe place. Right? Let's just keep inventing stuff as we wanted. The other day I invented another word. What was it? What was it? Drushtify. The other day someone was asking me, Swami, I was like, when it's podavatana, what is it? I said, podarization. I couldn't think of the word drizzle. Didn't come to mind, so I said it's polarization. Who cares? Language is simply a way to exchange ideas. As long as you understand what I'm saying, I understand that you understand what I'm saying, right? That's it, right? Let's carry on. What were we talking about? Bottle. So your attachment to your bottle is not your, it's not the problem. Your attachment to sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, that's the problem. Last Thursday, I was speaking to our people at the monastery, all our monks and our anagarikas and anagarikas. So we have a weekly sermon. Usually Guru Hamdra does it, but while he was out, he asked me to do it. And I said, my dear monks and dear anagarikas and anagarikas, you know, we come from a culture, typically in Sri Lanka, where we struggle with this concept of homosexuals. Because we feel that the only natural sexuality is to be heterosexual. That's the only normal thing, everything else is abnormal. That's the kind of culture that we come from. But I said, let's prepare, start to prepare yourselves, because in the future, not very far into the future, very soon, you're going to have people who are of that orientation and they will come and join our ranks. Because when they come to you, they will need refuge. Give them love, show them your affection, and don't treat them any differently. Because if that is wrong, you are also wrong. If it's wrong to be homosexual, it's wrong to be heterosexual. It is wrong to be sexual. How can a chitta be sexual? A chitta? A chitta is a chitta. A chitta is neither man nor woman. A chitta is a chitta. But once a chitta begins to fantasize, then it begins to imagine that it's either a man or a woman because of the drushti that it gets from the outside world. You go and stand in front of the mirror, you look at what you see and you think, right, I'm a man. That's how you know you are a man. There's no other way you would have known. How do you check the sex of your puppies when they're born? In just the same way you checked yours when you were born. Your parents would have said, you are a boy, you are a girl, and so on. But it's what you saw that determined your gender for you. You looked in the mirror and you thought, all right, okay, so I have all these things, so I must be a woman, I must be a man. So your chitta was drushtified. Your chitta took on this persona that you are a man or a woman. And then after that, what society did was, they kept feeding you data. And they said, if you are a man, you must have feelings towards a woman. If you are a woman, you must have feelings towards a man. These were all the indoctrinations that you received from the outside world. Chittas don't have such problems. But in your chittas, you give rise to different personas, different personalities arise. And one such personality is your gender. Because chittas don't have a gender. Chitta is just an energy. What gender is light? Light. What gender is it? Male or female? Heat. What gender is heat? Male or female? You nod your head because you tell me that's an energy, right? Yeah, that's because you fail to give me the gender of an energy, right? What is a chitta then? It's also an energy. So why do you think that it has a gender? It has no gender. Whatever your gender is, what you think it is. That's why I said, once, very soon we're going to have people who come like that, who are people who think that they are homosexuals. Who think that they're gays, or who think that they're lesbians, and they'll come and they'll join our ranks. Your task is to help them understand that they are neither. Your task is to help them that they're neither male nor female. See, that is where our focus is. That is how far we go. We focus on chittas. the bottle is not the problem. I mean, when chittas are what we are dealing with here, ladies and gentlemen, you know, whether you are still addicted to your bottle, that's just child's play. We're not concerned about that. You continue listening to the Dhamma, you continue practicing what I ask you to do, and then if your addiction or if this attachment that you have to your bottle is getting in the way of your Nibbana, it'll go away when the time is right. What I don't want you to do is to give up things forcefully. Because you giving up things forcefully, besides the unmeritorious deeds, there are 10 things that the Buddha has said not to do, not to engage in. Those things, do it, if you can't stop yourself from doing it, then tie yourself. So hog tie yourself, so, you know, go into a cave and lock yourself in there. But besides these 10 unmeritorious deeds, anything else that you do, just let it pass away. Just let it fall away. Your task is not to give up drinking. Your task is to understand the Dhamma. If I ask you to give up drinking, then I must also ask you to give up your mother, give up your father, give up your daughter, give up your son, give up your brother, your sister. I don't ask you to do any of these things. Yes, I do encourage you from time to time to come into the sasana, but that's only so that you can practice the Dhamma better. That's all. That's all. Your understanding of the Dhamma will gradually release you from all the attachments that you have. There may be some who are addicted to the TV. There may be children who are addicted to gaming. There are those who are addicted to porn. I mean, people are addicted to sight. What's the difference? Which one's worse? Your addiction to apples or oranges? Which one's worse? One guy is addicted to apples, the other is addicted to oranges. Which one's worse? Then you tell me which one's worse, homosexuals or heterosexuals? You get the idea, right? It's the same thing, just a different guise, that's all. You know, I can't be coming up here and saying I love all the same and then say just send me the straight people and I'll talk to them. I don't care much about the others. Oh, I don't like them. What right do I have to say the first and then say the next? Those things are mutually exclusive. There is no such thing. Today I look at you and I know that you are neither man nor woman. You are simply chittas, but you have taken a certain form. This physical form of yours is simply the physical form of yours. And because of how you thought you were at the moment of your death, that shaped the structure that you're in today. Remember, the chitta comes first and then it creates the abode for itself. At the point of your last exit, in your mind you would have done a karma. That karma would have been one that was typically characteristic of males or typically characteristic of females. Therefore, you ended up with these bodies. I don't know whether I can say freely some of the things that I want to say because people get offended. That's the thing. Otherwise, I could explain to you what creates a male and what creates a female. Now you look at me and say, yes, yes, Swami, tell us. You say that. You should see after I say it. Otherwise, I could tell you why you were born female. I can explain to you why you were born male. But people get offended. Why do people get offended? See, that's what they don't realize. They think I'm the one offending them. Why do people get offended? Because they think I'm talking about them. Because they think that I'm female and so anything Swami Nuance says against females is an attack on me. How dare he? Who does he think he is to attack me? Me and my kind. What kind? My kind? See, my kind is jati. You know, when you go shopping for things, like, don't you say, I don't like, main jaati nahi, maine jaati nahi. You ask, right? See, what you say is, I don't like it, I don't like this kind, do you not have another kind? I don't like this type, do you have not have it another color, another type? That is what jati is. Typification. You type things, not this type. Typification. Grouping things into one unit and identifying things, giving things an entity, giving things an identity, that is what the ignorant mind does. So there would have been a point in your previous existence where you would have thought to yourself, would it not be better to hoard? Would it not be good to hoard, to gather, to collect, to grasp? I've got to be very careful now. Please forgive me if this hurts you. We'll edit it out of the online sermon, okay? Would it not be good to grasp, to womb, to hoard, to womb, to collect, to gather? And that's what happened. Because the womb is a place where you gather things for creation. You collect things for creation. So if you typically like to collect things, gather things, hoard things, keep things rather than give things, then you womb things. I'm using womb as a verb now. You womb things. That's why a mother is always better at looking after. A mother is always good at caring, looking after, sheltering, protecting. You know, you'd be at a loss if you left your little one with the father. He'll forget to feed the child. He'll forget to feed the child. He'll forget to change the nappy. But a mother's not like that. Because a mother always protects. Protects. Protecting, you think, is a good thing. I think they'll go picketing outside here tomorrow. There's a lot that I want to share with you, but I don't know whether this is the safe. Whether this is safe for me to continue. I don't mind what you think of me, but here's my problem. If you fall out of love with the Dhamma because of some things that you just can't come to terms with, because of any internal conflict that you have with the Dhamma, and then you think, what? Buddhism tells me that I'm a bad person. I don't want Buddhism. Then you're shooting yourself in the foot. I don't want that to happen for you. Because anicca dukkha and anatta is all we need to free ourselves from suffering and to attain Nibbana. But I'm trying to give you a few bits and pieces from here and there as well, just to give you a sense of what's happened to you. After all, we are here to understand who we are. You know, medical science will tell you how your chromosomes have determined your gender. Right, if you're an X and a Y, you're a male. If you're X and an X, you're a female. But medical science will not tell you why it was X and Y or X and X. They'll tell you it is by chance. There was chance, probability. When the embryo, or when the, what do you call it? I can't remember the terms now. Been a while. The egg. When the egg is fertilized by the sperm, right? So each carries half of the chromosomes, right? And then it becomes the embryo. As it fertilizes. And that's where you got half and half. But what medical science doesn't tell you is why it was that way. It tells you why you were, actually, in fact, it tells you how you were male or female. It doesn't tell you why you were male or female. That's what medical science doesn't tell you. Because that is all determined by cause and effect. What are those causes? See, even if you go back a few thousand years, when we were hunter-gatherers, right? What the males used to do was they used to go and hunt. They used to go and hunt, they'd bring home what they'd hunted. The females, they'd stay back, and then they would collect. They would keep things safe. They would protect. So even to this day, typically in most societies, and it's changing a little bit now, particularly in the Western world, but mostly in our culture, typically the woman needs to be protected. We need to protect. So they look for protection. They look for safety. Men look for freedom. Yes or no? If you keep asking a man, who rang you? Where's the text from? Right? Why are we late? That marriage is not going to last very long. Whereas the other way around, if you keep asking your wife, who's that text message from? Oh, he cares a lot too. He even asks me where the text message is from. You like to know that someone's caring for you. That is typically female characteristics. You like to think that someone cares for you. Someone's always protecting you. That's what you like. Men don't like that. Men like freedom. That's why a bodhisattva is always a man. They're looking for freedom. That's why only a man becomes a Buddha. They don't seek protection. They seek freedom. Here's what the Dhamma is going to help you do. It's going to help you to elevate your mindset. So the Dhamma can help both men and women in this room to attain Nibbana. It is not something reserved for men. The Dhamma is not for men or women, it's for minds. Whether you have a mindset that looks to capture or a mindset that looks out there for freedom, either way, these are two very worldly things. So I can't give credit to men just because they're looking for freedom, because that freedom is not the freedom that the Bodhisattva sought. Right? That freedom is like, you know, I just want to be free. I want to go and be with my friends and be free. I don't like a woman nagging me all the time, asking me where I've gone, where I've been, right? Why am I late? I just don't like that. I want my freedom. And that's not the freedom that we're talking about here. I'm talking about freedom from sight. So whether you're a man or woman, the Dhamma can help elevate yourself. Lift yourselves up and out of these characteristics that you are. Because this freedom that I speak of through the Dhamma is not a worldly freedom. It's supramundane. It transcends worldly barriers. That's the freedom I speak of. Freedom from sight. So that's what I say. There's a lot more that I can go and talk to you about, but sometimes it gets a bit hot. Hot water. You have to take it one sip at a time. If you drink too much of it, you end up burning yourself. You are offended by anything I say if you think that I'm talking about you. If you think you're a female, and I tell you that females are born or women are born because of such and such characteristics, you know, females cannot be born because of Vitaraga, Vitadosa, Vitamoha, right? If you are free from desire, aversion and delusion, can you be born females? Once again, I ask a question. If you are free from desire, free from aversion and free from delusion, can you be born females? If you are free from desire, aversion and delusion, can you be born males? No. So then I have no good things to tell you about why you were born male or female. Have I? Have I? No, all I have say is raga, dvesha and moha. You were born male or female because of desire, aversion and delusion. Are they good things to say? Those are not good things. Those are the things that cause you suffering. So, really, to put it very simply, there is nothing good I can tell you about yourselves which caused you to be born either male or female. So, if you think that you are a man or a woman, everything I tell you is going to offend you. That is why, first of all, I need you to understand that you are nothing more than a chitta. Once you understand that, then I can tell you everything about what causes a man, what causes a woman, how you become an animal, how you become a monkey, how you become a preta, and all these things, because you won't be offended. Because here's what happens when you're offended. You close down. That's what happens. You back up. And you close yourself down. And then you are not receptive from there on. You shut yourself off. That's the last thing I want to happen. Not after you brought yourselves here from wherever you have come. So, let's put all that to a side. Right? One day through Paticchasamuppada, you'll understand all of this. Paticchasamuppada is the principle of cause and effect. It is the father of all understanding. My task is to equip you with that knowledge. Is that okay? So I give you the basic understanding of Paticchasamuppada, the law of dependent origination. Once you are equipped with that knowledge, then you can work out how all things originate. It's the theory, it's the principle. Once I teach you F equals ma, I don't need to work out the numbers for you to work out how much force you get when you have this amount of mass and this amount of acceleration. You can work that out yourself. So I want to give you the theory. I'll give you a few examples from here and there, but I'll stay shy of anything that might offend you. Because I'm still not 100% certain that you will not be offended. I still don't have that assurance. Because I don't want you to fall out of love with the Dhamma. If you don't like me, that's okay, because I'm not here for you to like. That's okay. I want nothing from you. So therefore, I don't mind even if you don't like me. I just want your salvation. I'll tell you why I say I don't care whether you like me or not. Because I don't expect my happiness to come from you. That's why. If I expect my happiness to come from you, then I will care a lot about whether you like me or not. When a girl walks up to a guy and says, "Do you like me? Don't you like me?" Then she'll ask, "Why don't you like me? You used to like me a lot, but nowadays you don't like me." Then he'll say, "Well, I don't like the way you do your hair." Then she goes and does her hair. And if you feel that your other half, your boyfriend, right, your husband is not as loving as they used to be, sometimes you make some changes about yourself. You go, you know, do a makeover, you put your makeup on, or you put, I don't know, what do you call them? Manicures and pedicures and all sorts of things, right? And then you try to impress the other person. Because your happiness depends on something that they give you. That's a very risky place to be. When your happiness depends on someone else. So for some of you, maybe your happiness depends on another person being alive. No? If your happiness depends on another person being alive, do you know you are in such a dangerous position to be in? You know that they're going to die, don't you? If you're telling me, "Swaminas, I'm a very happy father. I'm a very happy and proud father." Oh my God. You are just asking for trouble. Because what are you really saying? "I am so happy that my sons and my daughters are alive. Because it is them being alive that helps me feel that I am a father." When you say, "I'm a very happy father," those are the words that resonate in my mind. I read between the lines. So when you tell me, "Swaminas, I'm a very happy father," in my mind, I tell you, be so at your own peril. because you are sitting on a ticking time bomb. If you come and tell me, Swaminam, I'm a very happily married man, what do I have to say now? Same thing. I'm a very happy pet owner. Same thing. I'm a very happy car owner. I'm a very happy businessman. See, if you have a reason why you're happy, there's a problem. Then you're not really happy. You're conditionally happy. If I ask you why you're happy and you have a reason to give me, there's a problem. Yes or no? Right. Shall I ask you the question then? Do you have a reason to be happy? And then you tell me, of course, look at this, a wonderful day, isn't it? Oh dear, dear, dear. Wait until you hear the thunder. So if there's a reason why you're happy, I need you to come out of that. Make your happiness independent. Transform your happiness, transform your thinking so that your happiness is not dependent on anything. And I'm here to show you how to do that. People are confused. So it's not just you. People are confused. People often think that comforts in life are the same thing as happiness in life. Let's try and draw a few comforts on the board. Comforts. Okay? That is a comfort. It's a car. Hopefully you can tell it's a car. Please nod in agreement, thank you. Be courteous. Come on. Right. That's a comfort. What else do you have as comforts? My drawings are so good that when I draw it, I have to write what it is next to it. That's a comfort. What other comforts do you know? Thank you. Comforts. Food. Don't tell me microphone. Food. These are comforts. Give me one or two more. One more. Oh, we forgot. Duh. How can you forget that? Comforts. I have a question. When I draw these things up here, doesn't your mind tell you that if I had those things, I'd be happy? Think. You're looking at the board right now. You can see the things I've drawn in this board. When you look at these things, doesn't your mind tell you, oh, if only I had a little bit more of that, I'd be happy? Yes or no? Let's speak honestly. Speak truthfully. Yeah? Isn't this why you work hard? Isn't this why you do Monday to Friday, 9 to 5? Isn't this why you work weekends? Others, I can draw another one. A few more? What are they? Chill. You can't see the board now, can you? Can you? Just about? Children. Ah, what the heck. You've drawn children. Let's draw another one. What's that? Partner. Now what? Okay. Someone said partners. Now. Friends. Do you have to take it there all the time? Right? Can't we just keep this civil? Friends, partner, whatever, right? Whatever floats your boat, okay? Right. So these are comforts. But I have a question. Once again, I ask you, as you look at this board, and I look at all these things I've drawn here, doesn't your mind keep telling you, if only I had a little bit more of that, I'd be happier? If you had a little bit more money, wouldn't you like that? Wouldn't you be happier? See, most people, they haven't even seen all the money that they have. Because the bank sends them a statement. They only see one number. They count the number of zeros before the decimal point, and that makes them happy. See how easy it is to make people happy? If only I had another car. If only I had a bigger car. If only I had the latest car. If only I had the car with the smartest gadgets and the latest, the fancy cars. If I only had it in another color. These are the things that would make people happy. If only my house was bigger. If only I had a swimming pool in my house. If only it had also had a badminton court or a tennis court or a basketball court. Wouldn't that be nice? If only I had my own basement gym. Well, wouldn't that be nice? If only I could extend it or had an outhouse, wouldn't that be nice? See, a little bit more of that and you think you can be happy. A little bit more of this. You go shopping? Yes? It's all right. It's okay. I don't bite. Yes, you go shopping. Yes. Just because I don't go shopping doesn't mean you can't. You have to. You have to go shopping because people expect it of you, and also you expect it of yourself because you think that is happiness. That's why you go shopping. Sometimes you maybe, you know, you scour the websites and see what celebrities wear. Some people do that. They look at what celebrities wear. They go on social media and see what... I can't remember any celebrities' names now because it's been 7 years since I heard any of those names. Some names I'll give people are probably dead by now. So I'll not. Right? You look at what celebrities wear and then you want to wear that. So you go shopping. You try on different makeup. You try on different jewelry. Movies. These are all comforts. So you're looking forward to the next movie. The next release. Every year you probably you know, go on what are they called? Rotten Tomato. That was where I got my movie reviews. IMDb. Yeah, you get your movie reviews from that. I used to be a movie fanatic. Every weekend, my wife and I would sit together, put our feet up, and binge on movies. Comforts. I thought they meant the same as happiness. See, these are things that you see on the board right now. You think this is all happiness. But the problem is, you go through life acquiring as many of these as you possibly can. Even by this point, you've gone through many, if not all of these, right? Is there anyone here who doesn't have any of this? Anyone in this room who's not at least had some of this? Anyone here who has no money? Anyone? See, no one else can do that. I can't. You have money, and I have no money. Let's see whether comforts and happiness are the same. Okay, shall we proceed? All right. Car. Anyone here who either personally or for their family doesn't have a car? There's one or two. Vast majority? You have. I don't have a car. There are a few vehicles at the monastery. They don't belong to me. They belong to the sasana. It is for sasana service, not my personal service. House. Anyone here who doesn't have a house? You either own one or you rent one. I don't own one. I don't rent one either. I stay in one because I'm given permission to be there. If they started charging me for it, I'd leave. No, I swear to you. If they started charging me for it, I'd leave and I'd go take shelter under a tree. Because if they started charging me for it, what would I have to pay for it with? What would I have to pay for it with? My card. I don't have a MasterCard. I don't have debts. I have nothing to pay for it with. So therefore, if they started charging me for shelter, I'd have to leave. I'd have to leave immediately. In fact, if I got a call right now and said, if you want to come back to the monastery and the kuti you're in, you have to start paying 1,000 rupees a month. I'd have to say, I'm sorry. I'll have to go into the woods or find a cave somewhere and live the rest of my life with bears or something. Clothes. You have a wardrobe full of clothes, shoes, jewelry, and various other adornments that you have. I have clothes. Yes, that I do. I have two pairs of clothes. One's on me, the other's on the clothesline. It was washed last night. These are the only two sets of clothes I have. I have no more. I'm happy. But I don't go shopping. I don't go shopping for clothes. Now you say, yes, Swaminas, you can say that because we offer them to you. Because you offer robes to me, I don't have to go looking for it. That's not mean. If you didn't offer it to me, I'd go shopping for it. If you didn't offer robes to me, there's only one way I can find robes. My discipline, the Buddha laid down these rules. Right? The way that I would have to find robes is to go begging for it. I can't go shopping for robes. And if I don't find any by begging, I'd have to go to the local cemetery. And if they had old rags there that people had just discarded, I'd have to collect those rags, bring them, sew it all up together, and then dye it and wear it. I am a beggar. You're not. You're kings. I'm a beggar. movies? How many movies do you have in your collection? What about Netflix? And all the channels you're subscribed to on YouTube and so on. You get your daily feeds, your weekly feeds. I don't watch movies. Music? I don't listen to music. But you have your earphones in your ears. You turn on your music as you drive to work. At home to relax, you play your music. On weekends, you play your music. You do it to enjoy yourself, but I don't. Children? I don't have children, I have your children. When you are sick and tired of looking after your children, what do you do? When you have puppies at home and you don't have any good use of it, what do you do? I mean, maybe you don't because you have expensive puppies, right? They're well bred. Right? But people, when a stray dog comes and delivers, right, those puppies are typically taken and left in that local temple. That's what people tend to do. It's very bad to do that, but people tend to do that. So what do you do with children that you have no good use of? Give them to the temple, right? So there are those among you who've given up your children to the temple. I don't have my own children, but I look after your children. And then family. I don't have a family. My family is everyone. You are also my family. I'd have no problem spending the rest of my life with you. I'd have no problem with that. I'm not attached to a family. I can be anyone. I can be with anyone. I can be anywhere. And I can consider anyone to be my family. But that is not so for you. Not yet, at least. For you right now, you have a few people who you call your family. Everyone else is not your family. Therefore, you have more love towards them than you do for others. Therefore, you direct your love towards a few people in this world. Therefore, you can't share it freely with everyone. So, food. What about food? You have a fridge at home? In which you have what? Things that next door neighbor likes to eat? Things that you like to eat. And then you go shopping to buy things that who likes to eat? You like to eat. Open your shelves mentally and just have a think about what you have there stacked up. Do you only buy things just to feed your hunger? Or do you also buy that box of chocolates, you know, a special treat from time to time, right? A bottle of you know what? Right, a tub of you know what, a box of you know what. Right, so you buy some confectionaries. We don't do that. So, all things considered, you have lots of these things. I have very few, if any. You think all of this is happiness when you look at this. That is the problem. If so, how come I, who doesn't have any of these things, bar maybe one or two, like clothes, how come I can be happy and you have come here today to ask me how to be happy? What is this sermon for? To learn how to be happy, right? If all of these things is the same as happiness, why are you here? Why are you here? These are comforts. It's not the same as happiness. Comforts is not the same as happiness. You have many comforts in life. I have very few comforts in life. Very few. I don't even have any footwear. So when we go on arms round, sometimes it's a scorching sun in the hot road. On the hot roads, it still hurts. It hurts just as much as it would hurt you. But it's free. I don't have to worry myself about footwear. I don't have to concern myself about footwear. Because for me, happiness is not the same as comfort. I just want you to understand that first. Right, so on the board here, you see comforts. Now let me draw happiness for you. Now I'm going to draw. What am I going to draw? Happiness. Okay? That's it. Oh, you think I'm going to do this? No, no. Just that. What have I just drawn? Huh? Chitta. It's a chitta. It's a chitta. That's happiness. Don't you all have chittas? Don't you all have chittas? So why aren't you happy? I also have chittas, you also have chittas, and I'm here telling you that a chitta is the same as happiness. So if you also have chittas, why aren't you happy? The answer lays in the fact that you are not content with a chitta. Because you're not content with the chitta, you go looking for happiness in all these comforts. Why? People said so. You were what-fied? Drushtified. People told you, your associates told you, your ignoble associations taught you that to be happy, you need all these things in your life. Therefore, what they did was set expectations in your mind. Those expectations then ruined a simple, happy chitta. All chittas are born happy. You spoil it. You ruin it. You destroy it. You strip it of its happiness. Because the moment this chitta is drushtified, ladies and gentlemen, with something as simple as, would you like some ice cream? Ice creams are nice. This is what people say. You remember the ice cream man? When you were at home, you heard the ice cream man. Like the ice cream uncle used to come. And then there was the music. And then you wondered what that music was. And then your friends said, ice cream man, ice cream man, ice cream. What's ice cream? Let's go have one, let's go have one. So everyone wanted an ice cream, and they told you that ice creams are good things to have. So here's what happens. The moment you believe their word, an expectation arises in your mind. Expectation of a happiness that is to be sought from the outside world. Once that expectation arises in your mind, now this free chitta becomes pressurized. This is what I call vexation. So here's what happens. This is now a free chitta. What has just been given to you as a drushti has now been instilled in your mind, and that becomes a vexation. This is now a vexation, which is a pressure on your mind. Now you have to relieve yourself from that vexation. To relieve yourself from vexation, because you have been given this indoctrination that ice cream is such a good thing to have, it's delicious, it's wonderful, now you have to go and acquire that comfort. You have to go acquire that comfort now. And when you go to acquire that comfort, the ice cream man says, no, can't give it to you for free. You need what? You need that. Money. So then you ask, but I don't have any money. But I want the ice cream, but I don't have money. Well, can't give you ice cream if you don't have any money. So what should I do to get some money? You got to go do a job. You got to go work. So then you go to the employer. Can I have some work, please? They ask, why do you want work? Because I want money. Why? Because I want to buy some ice cream. Okay, well, if you want work, you need to have your qualifications. I want to see some papers. I want to see some certificates. Do you have them? No. Well, go and get yourself some certificates then. Then what do? Now you have to go to school. So you go to school and then you go back to the employer. I've got my O-levels. I've got my scholarship done. Can I have a job, please? He said, no. They don't give you for O-levels. You have to do your A-levels. So then you go spend another 2 years. And then you come back and say, here's my A-level certificate. Can I now get some money? Well, in the last 2 years, many people have come with those certificates. So now that is not enough. Therefore, now we need an undergraduate certificate. Go get that and come. Because we have been inundated by the number of applications. We only have one job, but 300 people have applied. And they've all got an A-level certificate. So if you want to qualify for this, you need to have an additional certificate. Go get your degree. Then you go for another 3 years to university. All because you want to have what? An ice cream. An ice cream. 13 years you went to school. 3 more years you went to university. All because you want to have an ice cream. I know I'm seriously simplifying this, but an ice cream here represents all these things. See, you're going after comforts, but you're not going after happiness. Happiness was always with you. That's why I often tell you, ladies and gentlemen, Nibbana is not something you can fight and win. You can't fight for Nibbana. Nibbana comes to you when you give up your fight. The only reason you're not happy today is because you're looking for happiness. Stop doing that. But you can't. Because you still feel, if I have the next ice cream, I'll be happier. Why? Because of your drishti. You think the next ice cream will make you happy. You think the next lot of money will make you happy. You think a bigger car is going to make you happy. See, I don't have any of these things. And yet I am happy. The Buddha had none of these things. And he was happy. There are people who live very simple lives. And if they are content, they are happy. But once you... If you don't accept this truth, and if you feel that happiness is something that has to come to you from the outside world, then you will go looking for that happiness. And as you do so, you leave behind true happiness. See, this is why your happiness is conditional. Can't you see the conditions on the board? Don't you see the conditions on the board? These are the conditions that determine your happiness. If you have food with you, you are happy. If you have a nice car, you are happy. If you have money, you are happy. If you have a good family, loving family, you are happy. If you have children and they're well, you are happy. If you have clothes, you're happy. If you can watch the movie that you want to watch, you're happy. If you can listen to the music that you want to listen to, you're happy. If your house is good, you're happy. But if the next door neighbor puts another story, now you need to one up with them. You can never be happy with material things because there's always a competition going on out there. Because amidst all these things, there's another thing that you're looking from the outside. That is recognition. Recognition. And when it comes to recognition, you are completely and utterly at the mercy of those people who are around you. See, recognition is not something that you can work hard and gain. Others have to give it to you. Others have to give it to you. That's why you like to dress the part. That's why you like to make it known what your qualifications are. That's why you like it when other people see which car you get out of. Are you offended? Tell me and I'll reverse. The gear stick is with me. All I have to do is switch it on reverse and I'll reverse. Please don't be offended. Sometimes surgery can hurt. Right? But there's a bullet inside. And I want to get it out. But for that, I have to cut you open a little bit. And that will hurt. But if I leave the bullet inside, then you will die because of that. Your recognition has to come from the outside. People have to recognize you. They have to call you Mr. They have to call you Professor. They have to call you Doctor. These things make you very happy. For most people, this is true. I can't say for everyone, but for most people, this is true. You like to be recognized as a mother. That's why your children make you happy. Don't you love it as a mother when you walk down the street and your children come and hold your hands, right? And they're just being very playful, they're being very lovey. Right? You enjoy that feeling of being a mother because that is recognition that you get. You enjoy the recognition that comes with being a partner. That's why you like to have a bit of arm candy. That didn't do it, did it? That's why you like it when your wife dresses up. When she puts on her makeup and she's dressed very nicely, right? When she's dressed very glamorously, it makes you happy. And it's not just because it makes her happy, it makes you happy as well. Because when she's by your side, you can tell people, society, look, my wife, isn't she beautiful? That's how lucky a husband I am. Where did that conversation end? That's how lucky a husband I am. Take a moment. You know, I know some of this might be too heavy, but take this home with you and regurgitate. Spit it out and take it in again little by little over the course of the next week and ask yourself the question whether what I'm saying is true or not. If your partner is faithful, you love to talk about it. But if your partner is unfaithful, would you put it on the newspaper? Why? Why? If your child performs really well in some exam and he's island first, you put that in the newspaper. If he runs away with a girl, would you put it in the newspaper? I mean, at least for the sake of, you know, my child has run away, please can someone find him and bring him back to me? Would you? You'd probably go and maybe inform the police and tell them, please don't let anyone find out. If you can, please bring my son back. Because if my relations find out, if my neighbors find out, if my work colleagues find out, then that would be hell for me. Why? Because, I mean, let's be honest, if you let as many people as possible know, it would be easy to find out. It would be easy to find them, wouldn't it? But you can't do that because it all has an effect on your recognition. Because you don't want to be recognized as the mother or the father of the daughter who ran away with a boy. That's not the recognition that you want, because you want respect. You want admiration. You want recognition from society. That's why, although I can go begging with an alms bowl, you can't come with me. Can you? Not behind me, on your own. You'll come with me, yes, of course you would. It's Swami Nuanza with the alms bowl, you'll come behind me. See, I'm also as holy as the Swami Nuanza. I'm as virtuous as Swami Nuanza. I'm his humble disciple. That's not, because that gives you recognition. I know you. That's not what I'm talking about. If I gave you a metal plate, right? I give you a plate and I ask you to sit down under that Rajagiri bridge. I ask you to sit down under that bridge. I give you a stool. And to people who walk past you, you have to say, Ane Mahatya, Kanna Yamak Denna. Please, can I have something to eat? Ask yourself the question, how many of you, knowing who you are in society, your recognition, right, people know you, whether you'd be willing to do such a thing? But I can. I can any day. I can come to your door asking you for leftovers. And if you turn me away and say, not even for that, I'll give the dog but not you. I say, okay. Do you mind if I try tomorrow? Because I am no one. I am no one. Not no one. I'm not no one. I am no one. Because I'm no one, I don't seek recognition. I don't need you to recognize me as anyone. I don't need you to respect me as anyone. I don't need you to regard me as anyone. Call me a beggar and see if it hurts me. Because I am one. In fact, my ambition is to become 100% beggar. Today, I'm not 100% yet. Let me explain to you what I mean by that. Once you have become 100% beggar, complete beggar, then you have zero expectations. Beggars can't be choosers. If you are a chooser, you're not a beggar. Yes? If you are a chooser, you're not a beggar. Rahatan Mohan says, don't choose. They get what they are given. When they open their eyes, they don't choose to look at one thing and avoid the other. When they open their ears, they don't choose to listen to one thing and avoid the other. They don't go looking for praise and avoid insult. They don't go looking for melody. Because they are beggars. Whatever is given, they are happy to receive. That is where I am getting. There's still a little more to go. I want to be a complete beggar. At the mercy of the universe. Right now you can't do that because you want to choose. You are choosers, so therefore you are not beggars. See, you choose. You choose your meal today. When you go to the, if you go to a restaurant, they give you a menu card, right? And then what do? You choose. And if they don't have what you like to eat, what would you do? Then you try the next restaurant. You might ask them, do you have this? They say, no, we don't have string hoppers. Oh, no string hoppers, and we won't come back there again. You try the next job. Just remember the last time you went on a trip somewhere, right? And then say, your wife said, I feel like a spot of hoppers today. Shall we stop for hoppers? And then you drove past 100 restaurants. And you were looking for the board outside. They said, Aapayata. Yeah? And then you stopped. Then you went and asked him, do you have? No, we start at 4. Not yet. Right. So you got back in the car and you left. But they had rice. They had string hoppers. They had bread. But they didn't have what? They didn't have hoppers. You know, we have tourism in Sri Lanka, don't we? It's a massive industry. Why do people come to Sri Lanka on tourism? Because they're looking for hoppers. So, it would be in our best interest for them to not to listen to these sermons. Because this is going to kill our economy. Because if the foreigners hear these sermons, right, and then they begin to realize, what's the difference between a hopper and a German sausage? I'm in Germany, we have the sausage, why should I go to Sri Lanka for a hopper? If the Indians hear this, I have chapati, why should I go to Sri Lanka for hoppers? The chapati and the hoppers are the same thing. No big deal, no difference. I have my puri here, why should I go for hoppers? What's the difference? But mark my words. One day, in the near future, Sri Lanka will be big on tourism. Huge. People are not going to come here for the hoppers. Not if you and I have a say. How embarrassing that we attract foreigners into our country to have a spot of hoppers. Is that what we have to offer the world? Hoppers? This is the land of the Buddha. Tourism is going to be huge in our country over the next few years. People from far and wide will start coming here. They'll come here looking for the truth. I can't do that alone. As I said, if you and I have a say, if you and I have something to do with it, this country will once again become the pearl of the Indian Ocean. Once again. It is a pearl because it shines. It is a pearl because it glitters. It is a pearl because it's precious. Precious for what is the question? Today people talk about drugs being such a big problem. People talk about an ailing youth being the problem. We have the answers. The Dhamma is the answer. See, if you can teach someone that true happiness is in a chitta, who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want absolute freedom? You know, we talk about the Western world and how developed first world countries are, because what do they have? Happiness or comforts? You tell me. Happiness or comforts? They have comforts. That is what a first world country is. They have lots of comforts. They are very advanced in their technology. They are very advanced in how they manipulate resources in order to create more comforts. They have luxuries. These are all comforts. That's not happiness. Happiness is not the same as comforts. So how much money do you need to buy happiness? Where should you go to find happiness? How many houses must you have to have happiness? How many cars must you drive to have happiness? Where should you be to have happiness? None of those things. Here's all you need: a noble companion. A noble companion is all you need for happiness. Because a noble companion teaches you the Dhamma. The Dhamma helps you do this. Take out expectation. And in taking out expectation, you take out vexation. Now you're back where you started, which is a free chitta. A free chitta. See, this is the sasana. This is the Sri Sambuddha sasana. The only place where you can free your mind of expectations. Everywhere else you go, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find these things. I used to travel a lot. I love traveling. In fact, that was the main reason why, after having settled down in the UK, my wife and I, we got our passports there. Because once you got the British passport, you could travel wherever the heck you wanted. I love traveling. So every weekend, every long weekend would come, we'd go traveling. We'd love to travel, see the world. I can't remember a long weekend that we'd stayed at home. At least within the country, we would travel. Just get in, put on the navigator, and just go. We liked exploring. All the while, I was looking for comforts. We'd like going and staying in hotels. We love that sort of thing. We loved walking in the gardens. Natural beauty, we'd love going to those places. Beautiful sceneries, going and watching them. We'd love those things. All the while, I was only trying to fill my life and surround my life with these comforts, because I didn't realize that happiness was something entirely different. Today, I have none of those things. And yet, my happiness, I have a happiness today that I never experienced, even when I had all those things around me. I'm here to explain to you and help you understand that you can achieve the same. It is the Dhamma that will do it for you. Remember these comforts, your merits will bring you these things. Right? The reason that you have these things today is because you have merits. Merits will bring you these things. Merits will also bring you the Dhamma. Merits can bring you the Dhamma, but the Dhamma is what will free you from your suffering. Let me say that again. Your merits will bring you these things. So if you give food to people, you will get food. If you give a comfort, you will get comfort. If you build houses for people, you will never be left without shelter. You will get back what you give. If you provide transport to people, you will get it. In one way or the other, you will get it. If you give clothes to people, you will never be left without it. If you entertain people, you will get entertainment. These are things your merits will bring you. If you help people live a good family life, you will end up with a good family. If you help make friends, good friends will come to you. Anything you want in life, all you have to do is give it, and it will come back to you. It's like a boomerang. Whatever you throw, it comes back to you. But there's only one thing in this world that can actually help you achieve happiness. You're reliant today on your merits, ladies and gentlemen, because you still have these expectations. See, therefore today you are at the mercy of your merits. Think about this for a second. People are at the mercy of their merits. They continue doing merits in the hope that tomorrow they can eat what they want. I'm not only talking about you, I'm talking about people in general. A lot of people give, they understand that if you give, you get. A lot of people understand it because this is not just something that Buddhism teaches us. Even in other religions, they talk about this. Give and you shall receive. Right? So people give. They give for charity in the hope that they will receive one day. Because they give expecting something. At least they expect the other person to be happy. And that happiness makes them happy. So therefore now your happiness is dependent on another person's happiness. Still it's dependent. So when you give these things, you earn merits, and merits will come to you and they ripen as your rewards. If you give bad, then they ripen as consequences. But the problem is, today, because you're still dependent on these things, you are at the mercy of your merits. What I'm trying to help you do is to free yourself, your reliance, even on your own merits. I mean, that is so empowering. When you don't have to be at the mercy of your own merits. See, Rahatan Mahanse is happy all the time. Take Mughalan Maharatan Mahanse. To you and I, he died a very sad death. He was beaten up by 500 robbers. But do you think any of that he had to, any pain that was inflicted on his body caused him any mental suffering? Not at all. Because mentally, his happiness was not dependent on anything. He had achieved independent happiness, unconditional happiness. That is because the Dhamma had done its magic on him. It's only the Dhamma that can take out these expectations. Only the Dhamma can do that. Your comforts can't do that for you. So this is why even last week I asked you to spend more time on your salvation. In other words, spend as much time as you possibly can with the Dhamma. Because the Dhamma is not going to bring you these things. It won't. The Dhamma won't bring you these things. What the Dhamma will do is free your mind of expectation so that whether you have them or not, you'll be happy. Today, you are only conditionally happy. Today you are happy, tomorrow you are unhappy. Let me ask you a simple question. Answer this for me. At 5 o'clock tomorrow, okay? At 5 p.m. tomorrow, will you be happy or unhappy? Go on. I picked the wrong time, didn't I? Okay. 5:30 then. Will you be happy or unhappy? I'm trying to prove a point to you. At 5:30 p.m. tomorrow, will you be happy or unhappy? What's the answer? I don't know. Why? Because your happiness is dependent on these things. Ask me the question now. Go on. Ask me the question. Swami Nuhansa, repeat. At 5 o'clock tomorrow, will you be happy or unhappy? Oh, I'll be very happy. See? Now ask me another time. 5:30. Same answer. 6, same answer. But I'm going to get a call from my mother saying my father's passed away. At 5:35. Now ask me again. At 5:36 tomorrow. So 5:35, I get a call from my mother, my father's passed away. 5:36 tomorrow. Ask me. I'm still very happy. The Dhamma has healed me. The Buddha has healed me. The Mahasangha has healed me. You can only tell me whether you're happy right now. In the next moment, anything can change. Yes or no? In the next moment, anything could change. You can only tell me about your state of mind in the present moment. Therefore, I need not go till 5 o'clock tomorrow. In 5 minutes, you can't say. You can't tell me. See how unpredictable your happiness is for you? What does that tell you about your life? Okay, here's a question then. Let me ask you another question. Give me one time out of all the time you have from now till your death, okay, that you can tell me 100% that you will be happy. Give me one time. Say one. You have to give me a time, not this moment. Besides this moment, give me one time on the clock, right, on the calendar, between now and your death, that you can tell me for certain, dead certain, I will be happy. Swami Nuhansa, nothing in the world can take that away from me. Give me. Can you? No. What is the point of being human? If you can't even tell me what the next moment is that you're going to be happy? I rest my case. Your Honor, I rest my case. You can't tell me the next time you'll be happy. I can't give you any time and ask you, at this point will you be happy? I can't ask you that either. But you can ask me any time on the clock. And the answer is still the same. See? I don't have any of these comforts. You have lots of it. But I have the one thing you want. I have the one thing that you all want, but you don't have. I don't have any of the things that you have, but I don't want them. That's why I'm happy. That's why the Dhamma is the only answer. The Dhamma is the only solution. I speak to you like this, folks, because I know people, most people among you are very, very busy people. Perhaps a Sunday morning when you're here is a big loss to the country's economy. Probably. You're the people who put daily bread on the plates of many people in our country. So therefore, you're very busy. You have very hectic lives to live. You're busy making rules, making policies, creating law, running the country. You are the heads of organizations. Maybe the heads of states, I don't know. Maybe there are people among you who influence the heads of states, I don't know. There's one thing I do know. You're very busy. You're the Rajagirians. You're the Colombo crowd. You're busy. You are in the hub of our country. You're very busy. Very busy doing what though? Where's your happiness? You're busy studying. You're busy educating. You're busy running the country. You're busy running businesses. You're busy giving jobs to people. You're busy feeding people. You're busy building houses. You're busy building the nation. Yes, I understand. You're busy signing treaties, striking up deals with people and organizations and countries even maybe. But where's your happiness? You weren't born the president, therefore you won't die the president. I'll tell you that. You weren't born the prime minister, so therefore you won't die the prime minister. Well, as soon as you're dead, you will no longer be the prime minister. Someone else will take it from you. Agreed? You weren't born the head of this organization, so you won't die that. You were born naked, you will die naked. You were born with nothing to your name, and you will die with nothing to your name. You will be stripped of all your accolades and all your achievements, and all you will have left is whatever you have worked on your own behalf. Your merits, your demerits, and the Dhamma will be your only salvage. This is why I constantly keep repeating, ladies and gentlemen, you need to step up your game. Yes, you are busy. I'm not suggesting that you have to leave everything behind and just come and, you know, become hermits and practice the Dhamma. That's not what I'm saying. I understand that you will have some commitments that you can't shake your hands off or shrug your shoulders to. I understand that. But you must understand the Dhamma, because the Dhamma is your only savior, only refuge. At least understand this. Don't let your happiness be determined by the comforts that you have in life. If ever you look at a comfort and you think that is my source of happiness, slap yourself. Because in that moment you're crazy. Slap yourself. When you look at a table laid down with lots and lots and lots of food, and you think to yourself, wow, today's a nice day, look at all that. And if that makes you happy, slap yourself. Because in that moment, you've gone crazy. If you bring home a new car, or someone gifts you a car, or you build a new house, or you buy a new house, or whatever, and you walk into it and you feel like the king of the palace, and that makes you very happy, slap yourself. Because you deserve that. Because you have forgotten that true happiness is not something that a house or anything else can give you. True happiness comes from within. All you have to do is to free yourself from expectations. And how does one free oneself from expectations? By understanding the concept of anicca. Anicca is the understanding that all things are manifestations. This is what I explained to you last week with the candles. When I asked you about the two candles, remember there was one candle that was new and the other candle was burning, and then we put it out. And then you had a story to tell about the candle that I put out. You said that candle was lit previously. So you saw a difference between the unlit candle and the candle that had been put out. That difference is the problem that you have. In both cases, there was simply no fire. That's it. But somehow one candle was special to you and the other wasn't. That separation that you do in your mind is the problem that you have. And this is why you feel that you are an identity. Because you separate yourselves. All five people who live with you at home, they all eat of the same rice pot. Yet, you feel that you are an individual and none of the other four people at home are you. You feel that you're all individuals. You feel that you are identities. You feel that you are entities, simply because you don't understand this concept. What is that concept? The concept of anicca. So take this home with you today. You are simply a chitta. A chitta is born when the eye comes into contact with an object, or when the ear comes into contact with sound, or when the tongue comes into contact with taste, or the nose comes into contact with smell, or the tongue comes into contact with taste, or the body comes into contact with touch, or the mind comes into contact with a thought object. Then a chitta is born. That's all it is. This is a chitta. A chitta is born, and it arises and it passes away. Happiness is not something that you have to insert into the chitta. It's not something that you have to throw at the chitta. Happiness is not an add-on to the chitta. A chitta by itself is happy. If I had a weight and I asked you to put it on your head, right? If you had a weight in your hand, you put it on your head, you'd say that was heavy, right? Now, to be free of that weight, what should you do? You just take it off and then put it away. To be free of that suffering, must you do something additional to that? If, let's say, we imagine a 10 kilo weight, put it on your head. Right? If you place it on your head, now you feel the weight of that 10 kilos. To be free of that burden, what must you do? What must you do? Just remove it. Lift it and put it to a side. Is there something additional to that you have to do? Is there? No, there isn't. Because the moment you put down the weight, now you are free. The same thing happens here. Suffering is born within your chitta because of your expectations that these things will bring you happiness. You believe that these comforts will bring you happiness, and that is why you have lost the happiness that is there within it. It is happy by default. It is happy by default. You need not do anything to be happy. Happiness is God's gift to you. It's there. It's there with you. It's God's gift. The Garden of Eden was God's gift. He gave it for free. But what happened? Adam and Eve, they had expectations. They wanted to try the forbidden fruit. When God said, "Let it be, let it be. I've given you everything you need. You've got fresh air, you've got the grass, you've got the greens, you have the sky, you have the water. There are the animals. What more do you need? Just let it be." But no, that was not enough. Eva was curious. She wanted to try the forbidden fruit. The forbidden fruit of expectation. And the moment they set expectations on that fruit, now they had to relieve themselves of that expectation, and there was no other way to do it other than to pluck that fruit. And then they took a bite. And then once Eva did that, she offered a bite to Adam as well. And then God got to know. And God said what? Out. Out of paradise. That's the same thing that's happening here. As far as I can understand, that is a metaphor for what's really going on. Please choose to ignore that. If you like. Today I study the Bible, and in the Bible I see Nibbana. I study the Holy Quran, and in the Quran I see Nibbana. Because there can't be two versions of happiness. There cannot be two versions of happiness. There cannot be two versions of the truth. There can only be one truth. And if this is true, and all other religions talk about the truth, then in those words, I must be intelligent enough to find the truth. Armed with the truth, today I can find the truth within those pages. The Holy Bible has a lot to offer. The Bhagavad Gita has a lot to offer. The Holy Quran has a lot to offer. But first you have to find the key. That's what I say. To me, that's a metaphor. That's only my interpretation. Please feel free to disagree with me. And if you feel, no, that's so wrong, there was actually a real garden from which God kicked Adam and Eve out, fair enough. I'm not here to argue with you. All I'm saying is, to me, that is a metaphor. So therefore, I don't go looking for where that garden was. I don't go looking for the garden. But if you believe that that was a real thing that happened, now you go looking for the garden. Where's the garden? Now you ask me. You ask, where's Adam? Where's Eve? What happened to them? I tell you, you are Adam. You are Eve. That was the original sin. You're committing it right now. The original sin of expectation. See, a chitta is born. By default, it is paradise. But once expectation happens, and you think that happiness comes to you from these comforts, now you go looking for those things. Honestly, you have toiled day and night. You have burned yourselves. You have expended your good energy. You have aged yourself going after all these comforts. How many years have you been paying that mortgage now? For how many long years have you been paying that mortgage, and how many more years left to go? When you finally pay that mortgage, you feel like you have now earned your house, right? When you finally make that last payment, and now you feel like, yay, I've got my own house now. I'm a free man. I no longer have my... Because I remember, I used to work in banking. When I used to work mainly in the banking, before I went to the back office stuff, I used to work with customers a lot. People used to come up and make their final payment on their mortgage, and their faces would light up. Simply because now they think that they have a house to themselves, and the bank has no longer a claim to it. Today I look back at them and wonder, you never had the house to yourself. It was only a piece of paper. See, now that they've paid the mortgage, when they die, do they take it with them? But when it's a nice house, when it's a big house, and you get a bigger mortgage, right? These are the expectations that people have. 3 people at home, 6 bedrooms. What for? Do you wake up in the middle of the night and go and try another bedroom? I wonder, maybe people do that. I don't know. I mean, maybe that is what that is what their thing is. How many cars can you drive at once? Yes, you need a car to get you from place to place, but how many can you drive at once? So how do you need 3? These are the expectations that you have. Expectations that the next thing will bring you happiness. It will never. The next thing you eat is not going to bring you happiness, I can promise you that. So don't try. Eat if you're hungry. Eat if there's a particular kind of nutrient that your body needs. Look for it, search for it, buy it, eat it. That's how I eat. But don't eat for the sake of happiness. Because happiness is not something that comes in food. Happiness is within you. Don't go places looking for happiness. Don't go sightseeing. Don't go traveling looking for happiness. Because you won't find it there, ladies and gentlemen. And don't just take my word for it. Ask yourselves, how many times have you been around the world looking for happiness? Have you found it? If you did, why are you here today? You're here asking for the Dhamma. What does that tell you? You've not found happiness yet. So why go traveling looking for happiness then? Don't waste your time. Don't waste your good energy. Don't waste your money. I mean, this is good financial advice. I'm going to being a banker again. This is good financial advice. Don't waste your money. If you're doing it for the sake of happiness, don't waste your money on these things. That's a bad investment. You won't get a penny back in return. If you want ice cream, eat ice cream. Eat all the ice cream in the world. But if you want happiness, don't eat ice cream. Don't try it. Once again, if you want ice cream, have all the ice cream in the world. If you want happiness, don't try it. Ice cream won't give you happiness. Who here wants ice cream? None of you want ice cream. What do you want? Why do you eat the ice cream? Because you believe the ice cream makes you happy. That's why. Bad, bad, bad choice. Bad choice. But as long as you are ignorant of this, you feel you have no alternative. So please take that home with you. You are simply a chitta, and your happiness is with you right now. Your chittas are born happy. You spoil it. Spoil it because you fall for people's lies that happiness exists in these things. Therefore, you try and surround yourself by all these things in life. You try and surround yourself by these comforts. And what more do? You teach your children to do the same. See, these are some of the expectations that you give your children. You ask your 20-year-old, when are you going to get married? By the time they're 25, they're not married by then, what do? You go looking for partners for them, don't you? Why? Because you think that is what my child is going to be happy with. No. Happiness is not something that a wife can bring or a husband can bring. If they could, they wouldn't marry your son. If anyone has happiness with them, they wouldn't marry another person. They wouldn't. They only get married because they think that the other person can bring them happiness. Meaning, they don't have it themselves. So why look for it in them? I know. I'm kind of like sticking needles in the fabric of society. Like it's a nicely woven fabric, and I'm sticking needles in it, right? And I'm cutting it. And it hurts. Because you're there sitting looking at me thinking, but Swami Vasa, I'm already married, Swami Vasa. How can we do these things that you're talking about? I have to keep my family, I have to keep my friends, I have to go eat, I have to earn money, I have to buy a car, I have to have my house. I've already set myself up, I've established myself over the last 45 years. This is what I've been doing. Swami Vasa, now you come here and burst my bubble. You're asking me to turn my whole life upside down? You didn't consult me before you made those choices, did you? Did you consult the Mahasangha? Did you, before you bought your house? You invited them to chant Pirith, yes. But that was after the fact. Did you consult the Mahasangha before you bought a house? Did you consult the Mahasangha before you bought a car? Did you consult the Mahasangha before you went and got married? Who did you consult? Your friends. Your family. This is who you consulted. They told you what they thought was right. They didn't have happiness. They gave you the same thing. And you fell into the same trap. Comforts are okay. I'm not suggesting you should throw all your comforts away. Let them be. All I'm asking you to do is, don't seek happiness within comforts. Those are very different things. Do you all get that? Dear ladies and gentlemen, do you get that? I'm speaking on your behalf. That is why I'm so passionate. I'm speaking on your behalf here. Please don't confuse comforts and happiness together. Your comforts are your comforts. They make life livable. Yes, I get that. Right? So don't go sell your car and take the bus from here on. You don't need to do that. You don't have to walk from here back home and leave the car out in the car park. You don't need to do that. Right, please drive your car back home and keep it with you, right? But what I'm saying is, please don't think that your car brings you happiness. So when you look at your car, when you look at your house, when you look at your food, when you look at your family, and if you feel happy within yourself, give yourself a slap. And slap yourself back to reality. Slap yourself back to reality. Happiness does not come from the outside world. You are looking at the evidence. You are looking at the proof. Happiness does not come from the outside world. It comes in one thing and one thing alone. Ekayanang ayam bhikkave maggo sattanang visuddhya soka pariddhavanang samatikkamaya. For every fear and grief, there's only one answer. Dukkha domanasanang attangamaya. For every lamentation, there is only one answer. Nyayasa adhigamaya, to achieve wisdom, a higher level of wisdom, there is only one answer. Nibbanasa satchikiriyaya, to attain ultimate bliss, there is only one answer. Chattaro satipatthana. The four contemplations. These four contemplations begin with your understanding of anicca, dukkha and anatta. Because what you contemplate is the kaya, is the vedana, is the chitta and the dhamma. That's why they call kaya anupassana, vedana anupassana, chitta anupassana and dhamma anupassana. But what you do is you apply anicca, dukkha and anatta into these four areas, and that is your contemplation. Merely understanding of anicca, dukkha and anatta gets you started. And then kaya, vedana, chitta and dhamma is all there is. It's like once I put on these glasses, must I also find something to look at? Previously, I didn't have my glasses on. I looked at things. Then I realized that I couldn't see things properly. So I went to the optometrist. They gave me a pair of glasses. Now that I put my glasses on, must I also go look for something to look at? Must I go searching for something to look at? No, why not? Why not? Because it's the same world. The world hasn't changed. It's just my outlook has changed. Yeah? So before you understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, what's there? Kaya, vedana, chitta and dhamma. Once you understand anicca, dukkha and anatta, now what's there? Kaya, vedana, chitta and dhamma. But you can't contemplate on them through insight because you don't have anicca, dukkha and anatta. These are the three characteristics of all existence, of all phenomena. So once you have your glasses, in other words, anicca, dukkha and anatta, now you just have to contemplate on what has always been. In the Buddha's words, that is the only path to happiness. Not in these things. Today you are comfort rich, but happy, poor. I, on the other hand, am comfort poor, but I'm very rich. Shall we swap? No way. You bring me every comfort you have in your life and lay it in front of me and see whether I am willing to give up the happiness I have in exchange for those comforts. All of you together, all 200 of you, bring all your comforts and lay it down in front of me. Bring all your cars, bring all your, no, no, don't bring your wives. Bring everything that you own. Bring everything that you own and lay them down in front of me and see whether I am willing to swap my happiness for your comforts. I'm not willing to swap, but here's what I'll do. I'll teach you that in them you will not find happiness. Once you realize that, folks, you are free. Keep your cars, keep your houses. Like I said, keep your bottle. You don't even have to throw the bottle away. Keep your food, keep your drinks, keep your music, keep your everything. Keep all of them. Just understand the Dhamma. These two things are not mutually exclusive. You don't have to have happiness and no comforts. There's no such thing. To be happy, you needn't be someone who has zero comforts. That's not so. You can have all the comforts in the world and you can also have happiness. My task here is to explain to you that happiness does not come from the comforts. Is that clear to everyone? Am I speaking against comforts? No. In fact, I am pro-comforts. Like I always tell you, when I see people driving nice cars, living in nice houses, what do? I rejoice in that. I tell myself, wow, look at all the wonderful things that people have been able to give. And therefore today they get. I rejoice in the giving that you've done previously. Maybe many lives before. I rejoice in that. If you are born pretty, I rejoice in that. If you look nice, I rejoice in that. Look at all the wonderful people that you are. None of you are ugly. You're already good looking. Now you think I'm flattering. No, you are. Look at you, beautiful people. What a lovely smile you have on your faces. That's all because you have given. You have given beauty to this world, therefore you have got beauty. If you had given beast, you would have gotten beast. But because you've given beauty, you've got beauty. If you'd given money, you'd get money. If you've given cars, you'd get cars. That's how it works. So whenever you have something, I rejoice. I am not against comforts. Keep all your comforts. Just come to the realization that happiness does not come from comforts. I'm here to show you how to keep all your comforts and also be happy, so that you can have the best of both worlds. Make sense? I have one question. I know you have this question, so I want to answer this question. You will ask me then, Swami Nohansa, why didn't you do that? Why didn't you keep all your comforts and also achieve happiness by staying at home? Here's why. There's one innate problem with all these comforts which you can't walk away from. And that is, when you have them, you have to maintain them. And that's a hassle. An unnecessary hassle. Cars are not built to be maintained. They are built to take you from one place to another. That's what I use cars for. What do you use them for? What do you use a car for? Once in a while you drive it. Around the year you maintain it. Yes? Around the year you have a service schedule and you maintain it. But once in a while you drive it. Most of the time it's parked in your garage or parked at the workplace. It's not being driven most of the time. Most of the time it's parked in one place, whether it's at work, whether it's at school, whether it's at, I don't know, your office, wherever, at home. Most of the time it's parked somewhere. But even when it's parked, just as much as when it's driven around, you have to protect it. You have to keep it safe. Because there are other people out there to damage it, to destroy it, to take it from you. All of that comes into the box of maintenance. That's a hassle, an unnecessary hassle. Today, if I want to go somewhere, someone gives me a lift. In fact, from the day I was ordained, I have not taken a bus ride. I have not had to take a bus ride. But I don't even have a car. Sometimes people drive me around in Marutis. Sometimes they drive me around in Ferraris. Because to me, a vehicle is simply a means to get from A to B. And that, whenever I want it, you so kindly offer it. So I don't have to maintain. I am the man who actually uses a car for what it was built. I am driven, you maintain it. Who's the winner now? You build the house, you maintain it, I take shelter. Who's the winner now? You cook the food. Yes? You have some today as well? Yeah? I didn't cook it. I didn't wake up in the morning to cook it. You cooked it. You packed it. Yeah? And then, this afternoon, you'll be serving it. All I have to do is take it into my arms, bow, sit down, do my pratyeksha, and eat it. If you could chew it from me, wouldn't you? And if that earned you merits, huh? You would do it. See, I use food for what it was created by God, to nourish me. You, on the other hand, cook it. Are you still trying to convince me that that life is better than this? I don't have a single penny to my name, but what I need, you buy it. You buy it. You offer it. I am the one who really uses money for what it's made. To enjoy what money brings. To enjoy the comforts that money brings. What is the point of money? Money for the money's sake is of no use, is it? Money in the bank, what good is it to you? What good is money in the bank to you? If you spend money and buy this, now you can use it. But money, can you eat it? Can you sleep, sit on it? You can't use money for anything, really. Money is of no use. Money in itself is of no use. Can you write with money? No, but if you spend money and buy a pen, now you can write with it. So who's got the better deal? You have money, I have things that money can buy. Who's got the better deal? Are you still convinced that your life is better than mine? But here's the thing. You will tell me, Swami Nansa, isn't that so unfair? It's because we are earning all the money that you have all these things. So how can you talk to us like that? So I'll conclude with the answer to that question. The things that I need to sustain my life, I can receive by going begging for it. Four things. Food, shelter, robes, and medicine. If I had my alms bowl with me and walked out on the streets, if people have anything spare, they would offer it. There's not a single day, I believe, if I went out with an alms bowl, that I would return with nothing. It cannot be so because I have given a lot in my life. In fact, I gave the last thing I had as well, which is my life. So I don't believe there's going to be a single day where if I go out with my alms bowl as a beggar, people would turn me back and give me nothing. It might be simply a slice of bread. Maybe it will be half moldy, but they'll still give me what they have. And that's because I'm willing to go beg. I look up at God and say, God, I'm here. Here's my alms bowl. And God gives. I'm a beggar, so I don't choose. I give what is given. I take what is given. But because you choose, now you can't go begging. Why do you choose? Because you have expectations. Because the Dhamma has healed me today, this life is a simple life, is a happy life, is a carefree life. That is why I spend the remainder of my life trying to share with you this philosophy of how to achieve a happiness that transcends any material things. If you can prove to me that what I am saying is wrong and that what you believe is right, in other words, no, Swami Nansa, these things are true happiness, all I ask you is to give me one convincing argument and I promise you I will disrobe and I will come home with you. And I will slave for you one whole year for having wasted your time preaching the Dhamma every Sunday morning. I will slave for you at no cost to you, for free. I'll wash your dishes. I'll clean your house. I'll wash the dog. I'll wash the car. I'll drive you. I'll do all that. For one whole year, for wasting your time, preaching you all this Dhamma for one whole year. My deal is on the table. That's my offer. You give me one convincing argument that your philosophy beats mine. That no, in fact, happiness comes in these comforts and therefore to be happy is to have as many of these as possible. I speak with conviction, ladies and gentlemen. This is not hearsay. This is not just something someone told me. This is not something I read in a book. I met the Buddha. He gave me the Dhamma. I practiced it. The Sangha helped me do that. Today, I'm a free man. I'm better for it. I'm healing. I've healed a lot. Little more to go. That's why I invite you, come, taste paradise. Taste bliss. Taste Nibbana. It's like nothing you've tasted before. So what are you waiting for? Let's do the merit transfer and bring today's sermons to a close. Let us all take a moment then to transfer the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the Noble Triple Gem, inviting the Swaminathas to deliver the sermon, listening to the Dhamma and preaching the Dhamma, as well as various other meritorious deeds that you have done throughout the day, and creating a conducive environment for all to come along and practice the Dhamma in peace and harmony and in comfort. Let us first and foremost transfer this message to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer this message to all monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us transfer this message to Guru Swami Mahanse, my teacher, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those, to friends of the monastery and our devotees, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in this merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments in overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees and our teachers, as well as those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them, to everyone who on our behalf went the extra mile and left no stone unturned. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to all of them. May by the power of these merits they also be healed of any physical and mental ailments in overcoming obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have protected, have preserved the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer this message to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer this message to those who lost their lives, our forefathers, our ancestors, those who passed away in our name, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and practice the path in peace and harmony. Let us also transfer this message to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe. Let us also transfer this message to those who lost their lives to natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, friends to us, supporters of us and helped us, assisted us in any way, shape and form possible and available to them. And therefore, with an abundance of loving kindness and compassion and a sense of gratitude for all that they have done for us, let us transfer all of the merits that we have acquired today to all of them. May they rejoice in these merits, and if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits that we have acquired today, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And may you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become a Rahatan Vahanse or an Arahat Theranin Vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen nidetnva, dvesha ginnen nidetnva, moha ginnen nidetnva, Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva,
Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetna mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetna Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetna Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetna Raga gini niveva Desha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansapa labeva Nivansapa labeva Nivansapa labeva
තුන්වන්ගේ සුවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බෙලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්ත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුගතතර වෙත්වා සාදු සාදු සාදු